Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
All right, baby. Let's do this. Guys, welcome to the Full Blast Podcast. I'm Jeff Fader, and I'm here with my good buddy, Ben Camone. He's handling our technical issues. You know how it is, guys. First things first, let's take care of a little business. Number one is Broadbeck Ironworks, makers of the 2x72 grinder. This thing is sick, and if you go to broadbeckironworks.com, and then you put in the promo code KNIFETALK10, you're going to get 10% off everything. Everything. So definitely check it out. They're great for this community, and I really appreciate them. I'm running through these guys. And I take care of everybody, don't worry. Evenheat, manufacture the finest heat treat ovens available. To get your next oven, go to evenheat-kiln.com. I mean, you can't get much better. If you're getting something hard, you get to use the Evenheat. You know what I'm saying? They can't get much better than that. That's it, period. Next are my friends at Maritime Knife Supply. Lawrence is the best. MaritimeKnifeSupply.com for all your belts, abrasives. It's knife-making needs, steel, abrasives, steels, and kilns, and forges, all that stuff. And if you need something, he will reach out to him. He's a great facilitator. I saw it firsthand. He makes things happen. If you're in the knife game, this is the place for you. Go definitely, and a tip for a tip, get yourself one of them file guides from Nordic Edge. Those are the best. Those are my favorite. I appreciate the hell out of Maritime Knife Supply, and I'm with him. And if you're getting the Damasteel for the Damasteel Invitational Knife Talk Build Along, it's all at Maritime Knife Supply, so check it out there. Next are my friends Sam and Jeff over at Sabre Oil Knife Finishing Vice. These are the best vices, period. They're overbuilt. They're beautiful. They're fantastic. You can hand sand your knives. You can finish the handles. This is the knife vice for you. And if you go to TrojanHorseForge.com and put in the promo code FULLBLAST10, you can get 10% off everything. 10% off the Sentinel oil, which I love, T4 Sentinel oil, the handle, press attachment, everything. Definitely check out what's going on over at Trojan Horse Forge. I just got off the phone with Baker Forge. Baker Forge makes great stuff. I'm getting more steel made just because it's so good and my customers love it, and your customers will too. Go to BakerForge.com, put in the promo code Full Blast, you need 10% off everything. All the Q-mize and sand-mize and tiger-mize and copper masks and all that is exotic stuff. Get 10% off with Full Blast. And definitely get yourself some of the jug of gator piss, because, I mean, if you're going to etch, you might as well use the best. I mean, you can't get better than a gator piss, period. It's forget it. Stop worrying about the name. Stuff is the best. And you know, anybody asks you what kind of etching you use, you say gator piss. You say it with pride. Don't say anything else. Say gator piss. Say, what do you use with the etching? I use a gator piss. So definitely check it out. And I think that they have it at Maritime Knife Supply as well. So definitely check it out there. I want to thank my friends at Total Boat, makers of great adhesive paints, primers, polishing compounds. I love their two-part epoxy. I also love their Fathom Thick Set for making hybrid handle material, which I've been using, and I love it. They have all the stuff you need to be successful. They have the molds, they have the stuff, they have the pumps, they have the cups. When you buy anything, they send you a pile of quart containers and all these things and all the information, and they're super duper helpful. I'm a big fan of Total Boat. You go to totalboat.com/fullblast. Check it out. I want to thank my friends at GL Hansen & Sons. That's G.L._Hansen & Sons. They are the makers of Gicarda, which is a unique composite of natural fibers and fabrics under pressure and heat, and they make great stuff. And I love that. I love that Gicarda. Ain't going much better than that Gicarda. It's stuff. You get the Bofa ripple cut. You get the Mahi Mahi radio arm Gicarda pheasant. And he's got other things too. He's got new stuff in the works. He's got golden buns, or I don't know, something like that. I know he's going to have the golden salami, and he's going to have other things. They're always making new stuff, and it's really easy to work with. And definitely check out Jordan Dan's. Jordan Dan's a knife maker. He did a whole video on how to finish it, and it's very helpful too. So definitely check out, go to gcarter.bigcartel.com and get yourself some of that. I want to thank my friends at Tormac. Tormac are celebrating 50 years of being in business with the Black T8 sharpening system. The water cooled sharpening system has made me a better knife maker by far, no question about it. Doesn't take too much off the heel. You're not using belts that you got to throw away. Stuff is awesome. I'm going to be joining them in Sweden in August. I'm going to be going out to Sweden and I'm going to hang out with them, all them Tormac guys, and we're going to tell them how it is. And we're going to do some podcasting, we're going to do some presentations, there's an art show. We're going to be fooling around with my boys over in Sweden. So definitely check out what's going on with them. Last but not least, I want to thank my friends at Pelican Pace for sending me that Pelican Pace. Stuff is really great. I want to thank Rob's Wildwood. Rob's Wildwood has been a great, great supporter and makes the best scales, great scales and handle materials, stuff like that. And the last thing I want to say is, if you're looking for something to listen to that's a little bit out of your realm of this makery podcast shit, if you like what I'm doing, if you like Knife Talk, if you like these other maker podcasts, but you're looking for something different, listen to Overseasoned. That's overseasoned.us. That's two restaurant guys out of the restaurant game, and they're telling great stories. One of the hosts, Tony, is my business partner here at Fader Knives. He's been doing Overseasoned for a long time, and then his business partner, Xavier. They're great chemistry. It's a great listen. Definitely listen to the latest episode where they're sending stuff back from the restaurant game. So definitely check out overseasoned.us. Follow them on Instagram and listen to you'll like it. Give it a couple episodes. You'll like it. I'm in the archives for way back, but definitely listen to the new seasons out. They sound great. They have great chemistry. It's the time machine's on with the guys at Overseasoned. So definitely check it out. With that said, I want to thank my good buddy, Ben Camone. Ben Camone is one of the best knife makers in the game, no question about it. And he is one of my favorite people to talk to because he's always got a great attitude. And we're dealing with a little bit of technical difficulties. And I want to thank you and appreciate your suffering through it with me. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I mean, I had a stressful day today a little bit, but other than that, I'm doing good. Thanks.
What happened? If you don't mind talking about it.
I had to get my boy early from school around lunchtime because he had some headache and a fever. And that's kind of unusual because he isn't sick often, you know?
Yeah.
But then a torn up work day, that kind of sucks. But usually my wife gets the kids because she's employed and she, she has those days off for for getting the kids. I don't because my boss is an asshole.
Is he?
Yeah, he's a total greedy.
So she is he okay? Is your son okay?
Yeah. He has an headache. I guess it's a slight sunstroke from yesterday. I would guess because he has very low fever, not high. And a slight headache. No symptoms. Didn't hit his head or anything. So, yeah.
It's been hot lately, no?
Yeah, super hot. And they were playing on the playground pretty much almost the whole day yesterday. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That sucks. And I tell you, the kid thing is, in this community too, I mean, one of the reasons why I started Fader Knives was because I had been working for a metal shop, and then I ended up getting an offer to work for a friend of mine who was a contractor, offered me a lot of money, and it really didn't pan out, and then he unceremoniously laid me off in the kind of a despicable way. We've made up from now on. I have nothing but respect for him, and when I see him, he's a good guy, and we've kind of buried the hatchet, but it was tough. But we had to make the decision. My wife and I made the decision. My daughter was very young, and my mother was having a hard time picking my daughter up from school. And my mother started to really decline when my daughter was very young.
Okay.
So we made the decision. Was like, well, why don't I be the guy who can do that stuff? So I built my shop in my backyard so I could make sure my kid's in school. Make sure I pick her up. If there's a problem, I can run and get her. And that was like part of Fader Knives we made the decision. It was like, this will work out ultimately because someone's got to be there when our kid's away. Before that, I was working almost 40 minutes away from where we lived, and my wife was working 40 minutes away from where we worked. So if there was a problem, it's going to be at least an hour to get to her. So this was an opportunity for us to kind of like say, all right, well, let's here's what we need to happen. So let's make it happen.
Not only that, but also I think in principle, other than the loss of money or time, you're super flexible as a self-employed person. Whereas if you're an employee, you're always dependent on your boss and how he is feeling about it. So it makes sense in that in those regards. But yeah, you're really losing half a day. You have either to work that in or I don't know. But
it's interesting that you say that, because I remember there was there was a big storm in New York in the United States. It was called Hurricane. It was Hurricane Sandy. Superstorm Sandy or Hurricane Sandy. I think of Hurricane Sandy. And the school was out of power. Our town was out of power for over a week.
Shoot.
And the school was closed because they couldn't heat the school, you know?
Okay.
And so my boss at the time said, well, if you want, bring your daughter to the job. We had a break room, and it was a disgusting break room, but at least there was Wi-Fi there. It was clean to a certain degree, and she would be safe because she was too
young.
And
it was outside of the city, and it still had electricity there. So
the school was out of electricity, but other places weren't.
Oh, okay.
So it was just the school had to close for a week. And I couldn't call in and say, I can't come in for a week. So my daughter came to work with me for a week, and we'd sit her down, and we'd sit her in the break room, and all the guys would always come in and be nice to her and make jokes. And then, but it sucked. I always felt guilty because my boss was like, I'd rather you here. And if your kid can handle it, I'd rather you here than not. You know, so it was like,
Yeah, but guilty for whom? For your boss or for your daughter?
Ben?
Yeah, yeah.
What were you going to say?
Guilty. You felt guilty for your daughter or for your boss?
I felt guilty for... I didn't feel guilty for my boss.
Okay.
I felt guilty for my daughter.
I bet she loved it, didn't she?
She didn't love it. She didn't love it. I mean, it was a dark break room, and it was like, you know, it wasn't like a nice break room, and it wasn't for a child, but it was like she understood that, you know, we had very, you know, we weren't we didn't have the ability to get like a nanny. We didn't have anyone that she could stay with.
Yeah.
My mother really wasn't capable of taking care of my daughter for a full day. So we didn't have many options. So my kid came to work with me for a week. And I just remember feeling very guilty that I couldn't afford to have her go somewhere better, or we had someone that could help us. But it was like, that's kind of the name of the game. I mean, that's, we do whatever it takes.
Yeah. I just was assuming she loved it, because when I was with my father at his workplace, it was kind of amazing for me. But yeah.
Well, for us, I mean, the interesting thing is that I've been in a couple metal shops where one of them was immaculate. I mean, the Center for Metal Arts, when I was there and we were doing really high end fabrication, it was immaculate and it was beautiful, and it was like it would have been a great place to stay.
Yeah.
But the other place I went with was a dump, because we were working so hard. And the funny thing is, I realized in the beginning, the reason why the Center for Metal Arts in the beginning, or the Fine Architectural Metalsmiths, which is part of it, this is back in the day, it's 20 years ago, or, you know, 18 years ago. The reason why it was so clean is because they weren't busy. So you had a lot of time to scrub the floors. So the second shop where I had a break room, I mean, it was a fucking disaster. And the reason why is because we were constantly working. I mean, it was like when one job would leave, the truck would be there and the guys would be ready to load the stuff up, and we would load the stuff up. And as soon as that came in, we went on to the next job. There was no like time to clean the shop up. It was like a high pressure, high intensity fabrication shop. So there wasn't like hanging out. The break room was like 15 minutes, or you could eat your lunch there.
Yeah.
So it was like, there wasn't a lot of time it wasn't meant to be nice. It was just like a convenience.
Would she even had the opportunity to go into the shop, or was she only allowed in the break room? Because with my father, I was going to the shop and, you know, playing or watching him work and playing with some tools, at least not the super heavy power tools, of course. But
My daughter never really showed a lot in. She came into the shop. She used to forge with me just a little bit, like once or twice, just to kind of bond with me. But she really never showed too much interest in it. And I never really wanted to push her and be in a position of pushing her into it. So, you know, I don't want her to feel like there's a lot of guys who are just like, I want my kid to do what I do. I'm like, you know what? I want you to do what you do. I want 100%. You to find what you like to do, and then you do it. So she hasn't really shown a huge interest in that stuff, but she was a very good sport, and my kid has always been a very, you know, she's a difficult kid, and she's always understood that, like, she's seen her mother and I work hard and, you know, come home dirty and have to work Saturdays and have to work Sundays, and she kind of understands. She's seen, and she saw the break room, and she saw that shop I was in. She could come out if she wanted. No, all the guys were really, you know, super nice to her and stuff like that. I wasn't really worried about that. But it was a tough, it was a rough shop. I mean, it was like, it was a rough shop. So I always felt very guilty about that.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. When she's not into it, I totally get it.
I mean, you don't want your kid to have, I mean, you know, but that's the name of the game. I mean, you just have to do whatever it takes, you know?
Yeah. So,
what interests me is, you know, now that business has been kind of on the tougher side for a lot of knife makers, I would say it hasn't been that tough. I think the golden age of growth on Instagram has been tough, but I don't necessarily think that business has been, I mean, my numbers are still slow and steady and kind of ahead of last year. I mean, it'll be a little bit, but like, we're on track to do better than last year, which is always, you know, what we're shooting for. A lot of that's because I'm not just, you know, putting all my eggs in one basket, but I'm starting to notice, and I wonder if you're starting to notice, an air of desperation on, let's just say, Instagram knife makers.
Yeah, within the community, I notice it, or at least through Instagram. You know, when I talk personally to people, the people I talk to, Martin Huber, Tobias Hangler, they don't really feel it, but they work a lot or make a lot of income with those courses. You know, they make knife making classes and things like that. So they were never really dependent on Instagram or that bubble. So they don't feel it as much. I luckily don't feel it as much because I early on, you know, had the newsletter and got my Common Knife Freaks on my website and independent of social media anyways. But you know, around on social media, you can, there is something in the air. Jeff?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm listening.
Sorry.
You cut it. I'm sorry. There was a little technical issue and you cut out a hair. So you were saying that on social media, you're noticing more people are kind of like complaining or?
slightly. Getting creative. Let's put it that way.
Definitely. Yeah. See, that's the funny thing is like, in the beginning, you know, a couple months ago, there seemed to be more outrage. And now there's more, when I say desperation, I'm saying this as respectfully as possible. When I wanted to talk to you about it, and it's so time sensitive. Like, you know, the funny part about the internet is things come and go so quickly. So if you don't talk about them on the sooner side, you're really kind of like going to lose out. But I don't know if you've seen, you know, about this woman who says Hawk 2. You know this woman.
100%.
So, yeah, you, of course. So if you're not, I mean, I don't know why anyone would not know, but I mean, I was listening to a radio show this morning and they were talking about the Hawk 2 girl. And I thought, if you're a good radio person, you should, anything you bring onto the show, you should be able to explain it. So if this is the first time. So on the internet, there's this guy, people are starting to do these like internet or social media. They're interviewing people off the street. And usually the big thing is you get kind of drunk people at, you know, younger people, probably high school, not high school, college level, you know, they're interviewing girls and boys and all these guys and gals. And they're asking, you know, crazy questions. And this one guy says, he says to this couple of these two women who are clearly, you know, a little bit loaded. One of them has got quite a personality. She didn't say to him, what's the one thing that makes guys go crazy in bed? And she goes, you got a toy, hot toy, spin on that thing, and something like that. And it was like, the way she said it was hilarious. The imagery, she said, was she, everything about
she was very expressive, or yeah,
she was very expressive. She had a she had a very funny attitude, and she's a hot toy.
She was feeling, you know, it.
She was feeling it, yeah. And she was funny, and she had, you know, she had a little bit of chemistry enough to make it fucking viral. Like this one fucking Hawk 2, and now it's Hawk 2. I've seen people are selling T-shirts Hawk 2 2024 for president. People are doing their license plate Hawk 2. It's like, so it's like crazy with the Hawk 2. Yeah. And frankly, when I was a kid, my father would say Hawk 2. You know, if you got to spit, you go Hawk 2. Yeah. You know, and that we would do that. I mean, it's not abnormal, but it's, the whole thing is hilarious. It's about oral sex. And, you know, the preconceptions of, you know, what people guys want and stuff like that. But the whole thing was, it just was a very good clip that went viral.
It was a good clip that went viral, and I don't blame the guys trying to exploit it, or I don't know, right, if make use of it, or, you know. But I think the reality of the Instagram thing is that we've got to sit it out. I mean, either it comes back or it doesn't, but I think there's nothing we could change about it. What I find amazing is that every single community, every single bubble talks about it as if they were the only ones that are affected. The gun community talks about it as if it was only about guns. The art community, I don't know if you know Sook Art, he makes, pin-up comic style, but naked women, but drawn.
Okay.
And he gets it too, but he talks also as if it was just the art community drawing naked women that gets it. So the bubbles, the communities within Instagram are kind of blind, not seeing that it's the whole Instagram algorithm or app is having it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the interesting part is we're all in these communities that think we're the only ones affected, and it's this huge crackdown on whatever people deem whatever. Yeah. I mean, but the funny thing is the desperation part with Hawk 2 is everyone's, you can tell that, like, she's becoming viral. Nobody really knows who she is yet. By the time this comes out, I'm sure everyone's going to know who she is. They're using Hawk 2. They're saying Hawk 2, and the knife makers are they'll post a little video, and she says, "You got a Hawk 2, you gotta spit on that thing." And then a knife maker will hawk a loogie onto their knife and then use it as like lube. I've seen that. I've seen another guy, you know, make a WD-40 can, and it says Hawk 2. Hawk 2 is like fucking all over the place. And the funniest part is like, I feel as though that people are grabbing on to Hawk 2 because when I say desperate, I'm trying to be as respectful as possible. Yeah. It's this sense of like, I need to get some fast virality, and this might be my chance.
Yeah. What I didn't check yet, and maybe you have the answer to that, is do those kind of posts actually better? Did you check the metrics, the likes and so on of those people? Or
I don't check other people's metrics. And my opinion about it is, there's two things. One is, when I had Chris Zeppieri on, he said that the biggest thing that people don't realize is with Instagram is that the content you put up has a shelf life. Nobody goes back and looks at your old stuff.
Yeah.
As opposed to YouTube. YouTube, he says, is evergreen.
Yeah, I've heard that.
People looking at YouTube videos, and it could be 100 years. I mean, they're still looking at Aaron Goff's videos from, like, you know, 10 years ago. But Instagram, it's a very limited shelf life in regards to the timing of everything. So it's made me be a little bit less... It made me be a little bit less, maybe a little bit more, not frivolous, but I'm not as careful because I'm just like... No one's going to give a shit in a week anyway, so who cares?
Yeah.
That's the whole... I think that's a lot of the concept with the Hawk 2 is that people are like... It's like, I'm not getting any help from Instagram. I better fucking grab some virality somehow. And I think it's hilarious. But at the same time, I do notice there's a few guys that I know are like hurting. And as soon as... If you feel like they're hurting and they put Hawk 2 in there, you better reach out. I feel like might be like a last grasp of like your own, you know, business humanity. I don't know. Hot 2 is like a calling card for a problem.
Yeah, it might be a solution, but I doubt it. But what really is, I think, if you're really desperate, if you're the guy listening and you don't get anything out of Instagram, I think really the solution, I mean, what your guy said about YouTube, that seems to be totally true. And YouTube, if you're consistent and making some decent content, then what I've heard is it's really great. I mean, Martin Huber made a channel, or made his YouTube videos, I think, under a year he started. And he has 3,000 subscribers already, and some videos, they go really good. But he puts them out weekly. He's consistent with it, and it's a lot of fucking work, he tells me. But I'm just saying, if you're really desperate and if you're looking for a solution, that might be it, because YouTube still seems to work. Put in the work and do it.
But like you said, everything is a slow burn. And that's the biggest problem that we don't understand. And I think that the people who are having the biggest problem are people like sub 10,000 followers who are like, I'm trying to find new people. And I feel as though with all this thing, if you don't like doing it, like I started Instagram in the beginning and I liked it because it offered me some freedom that I'd never got before. It took a long time to get here. I mean, I've been on Instagram for almost 13 years, something like that. And it's or 9 years, 10 years, maybe probably even more. I think more than that. I think 10 or so years. I've been at least, I said it one time, I don't remember what it was. But it's a fucking long slog. And if you take off, you're not helping yourself at all. And the weird thing is I still have those little dots that say you're not being recommended, but I'm still getting growth. I mean, I'm getting about 1% growth in the past 90 days, which is not nothing, but it is something.
No, I think that's very good.
And people are still, 1% over is not great, but I mean, I'm still getting non-follower views on some of my videos.
You're very consistent and you put in the effort that way. But I don't see many people doing that. I mean, I myself didn't post for 4 weeks or something like that. Yeah. Just because it doesn't pay off and I don't have the time anyways. And I'm thinking I'm sitting this one out and I'll see maybe, you know, when I've got time, then I'll post again. But right now I have no motivation at all.
I don't blame you. And if the newsletter's doing it for you, then God bless. I mean, for me, the newsletter is just okay. We don't do it every week anymore because I think that people got burned out. So we do it once every 2 weeks. And we're trying to do new things all the time because it's like, you know, we'll get some sales and stuff like that. But when the sales are done, I mean, I don't have anything on the books. I mean, I got a couple things, but nothing to write home about. And I'm like maybe two or I've got like four things that I have to do when I get home back from Spain. But the problem is like, I can't afford to slow down. Like I have to keep the foot on the pedal to the point where I figured out the system I do for making reels from now, that little transition, goofball transition thing. Number one, I like doing it, but I can do it quick. Like one of those videos I can put together and all day. I think about it for a long time. Like when this podcast comes out, I did a video where I actually was driving up past the driveway to go to the hardware store, and there's a bamboo field right by me, and there was a bamboo down, and I was like, oh, I'll just move the bamboo out of the way. I'm like, oh, I know what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna do a thing where I'm gonna grab the bamboo out of the ground and I'm gonna cut it up, and then I'm gonna put some mustard on it and then flip it up and turn it into a knife with a mustard patina, because I need a green knife. And it was like, it took me all of, I'd say, altogether 10 minutes to put the whole thing together.
No, and it's smart, like, and you thought and about it and you did it.
I try to think about it. I try to spend the most time. Well, what are going to be the because I need they need to be under 20. Everything needs to be around 20 seconds or less.
Yeah.
And I've been able to figure out a way to do it, and I think it's funny. I think it's fine, and I'm getting, you know, traction from the consistency of it all. Because just putting up a knife, I mean, when I do one of those transition things, all of a sudden I'll get a lot of people outside of my followers who will find it.
Yeah, I mean, the more I listen to that, the more I realize how much different our businesses work. Because, I mean, the newsletter, for example, is only the third tier for me to sell knives. Before that, I have the custom knives. That's my cash cow, the main business, so to say. Then I have my four retailers, which I try to deliver a knife or two every batch. And then there is only one newsletter knife, maybe, all every few weeks. So I'm thinking I'm not even that much dependent on the newsletter, because I'm still doing the custom orders. And when I post a reel or a video or a picture on Instagram, then for me it's more like having a catalog for people who do a custom order to choose from. And when I'm posting a video, oftentimes it's cutting videos, but very dry and more or less informative for the knife freak, you know, so he can evaluate or judge how the knife cuts, more or less. But you get the idea. It's nothing. No bling bling. I don't cook anything. I'm just showing the cutting for you to have a slight understanding of the performance of the knife. So, considering all that, we use the platform very differently, I think.
Yeah, to the point where sometimes I worry if I'm doing it wrong, because at first, the Instagram was perfect as a catalog. Like you said, people could screenshot stuff and put it up. But I was getting, a degree of stifling. I was getting stifled and then I started to see that the reels where I'm in it, especially in the thumbnail, were more likely to get new people seeing it. But I'm not sure that I was getting messages, people not knowing what I do, because they would look at my Instagram page and it's just like me, with making a face. And it was like, I have to kind of constantly think about it all. And the weird part is we're having to figure out ways outside of where we may be. Before we get off this phone call, I'll find out if we have fired fired our PR company or not. They've been good, but it has nothing to do with me. I don't have any say about it. And I frankly, I'm probably wrong about this situation, but this will be 2 weeks since I played, so who knows? But it's hard because our expectations are just not being met at a certain point. But at the same time, they're doing a good job for certain things, but it's like, I don't know, by the powers that be are not 100% sure that it's, we're getting as much out of it as we're paying. But regardless, we're trying to do everything we can outside of just hoping that a story, an Instagram story works. We're trying to do the newsletter. We're doing a lot of
collaborations.
Yeah, a lot of collaborations. Yeah. And a lot in the, but at the same time, we're doing everything we can to make sure that not only we're just paying their bills, but we're going ahead, and that's the most important thing. So,
yeah, totally. I mean, what helps me a lot are the retailers, I would say, also, because they just have a good reach, and you can generate new eyes, under air quotes, through them. And then that was always a conscious effort. I mean, it was more or less the only reason to have them from a business point of view.
But also, I mean, you've already established yourself as a very, very sought after knife maker. So, I mean, you're in a kind of a different, you and Mareko and Don Nguyen are kind of in a different situation where you're kind of far more in demand than I am. And
we have lower output. You have to consider that. If we would put out as many knives as you, we wouldn't be that much in demand, I would think.
Just to be as candid as possible, I mean, I got 150 knives on the website and they're not moving. It's like some days, the best part about having a website filled is that some days you'll wake up and then all of a sudden you'll have made a sale, like this past weekend, all of a sudden, $800 out of nowhere. All you got to do is go to, sharpen it, send it in the mail. That's the best part. Being able to be frictionless for the customer. It has been like the one thing for me that's been really great. But at the same time, it's like we're dealing with custom people as well. It's hard, but I'm not about to get Hawk 2. I'm not going Hawk 2. I'm not ready. If you see me put up Hawk 2, call me. I might be on the ledge. If I've got fucking Hawk 2 on there, there's a problem.
I'll catch you.
However, yeah, you get me. However, if I find out who Hawk 2 is, and if she just, I'll give you a scenario. Turns out Hawk 2 lives in my town. Turns out Hawk 2 wants to come over and do a collaboration. I'm fucking doing a collaboration with Hawk 2 in person.
I don't blame you.
You kidding me? If Hawk 2 lived in my town and said, "Hey, listen, I love what you're doing. I want to know if you want to do a collaboration." I'm a fucking making Fader Knives Hawk 2 collaboration.
Don't tell your wife. It might come across weird.
Yes, correct. But here's what I will do. And I'm sure, listen, this is you and me now. What is today? Today is June 24th. You and I are going to make this prediction right now. Some fucking knife maker is going to name their knife the Hawk, H-A-W-K, number 2. The Hawk 2 will, somebody will name their knife the Hawk 2. If Hawk 2 lived in my town and said he wanted to do a collaboration, we would make the Hawk 2 knife.
100%.
There ain't no stopping me. And if she's in person, there ain't no stopping me. But I can't just be, you know, like cut and pasting some of her fucking videos and putting it together with my dumb ass. That ain't going to happen.
No, but in person, that's legit then.
Oh, in person. She lives down the street. And you know what? I think the same thing for you. All of a sudden, she comes up to you and she goes, Hey, Ben, I love what you're doing. And I want to know if you want to do a Hawk 2 collaboration knife. What are you saying?
100%.
100%. That's it, my man. That's why you're the best. I tell you what, I really appreciate your honesty because, you know.
Dude, I'm a whore. I'm never turning down a collaboration no matter what. I mean, I'm proud of my collaborations I've had, and I've worked with amazing guys, but Hawk 2 Girl, I mean, that's one in a lifetime opportunity, so you can't turn that down.
Yeah. You know what the funny thing about Hawk 2 is like now we're in like the second week of Hawk 2 now where it's like, it's outside of the Instagram, TikTok, you know, social media world.
Yeah.
It's now starting to go into
mainstream.
Mainstream media. I'm starting to see more mainstream media talk about Hawk 2, and what these guys are saying is, I would hate to be the father. I would hate to be the father of Hawk 2.
Come on.
And I'm thinking to myself, compared to who? I mean, compared to like all these porn people and OnlyFans people, Hawk 2 just said Hawk 2. She didn't do anything.
Also, she was kidding. She was trying to be funny. I mean, I think
she was trying to be funny.
Yeah.
She was being hilarious. So, I mean, everybody, don't worry about Hawk 2's dad. Hawk 2's dad, I mean, maybe he does need a little suit. Listen, Hawk 2's dad, if you're listening, we're going to do a collaboration, and 10% of the proceeds will go to your getting therapy. So how you like them apples? You know, we're going to get you squared away.
On the topic of money, you know who Shane Gillis is?
Oh, yeah, Shane Gillis. Yeah, he's a comedian, an American comedian, who was supposed to be one of the members of Saturday Night Live.
Exactly.
And then they dug up an old podcast where he made some racist, inappropriate jokes that were just like, at the time, it wasn't the worst thing in the world, but it was inappropriate.
Yeah.
And Saturday Night Live decided to not hire him.
Yeah.
And then they ended up asking him to be a host. So he became a host after a year or so.
Exactly. And that was very recently, but he, on some podcast, either his or I don't know where I heard it, but he was talking about how much money he got for the one show he did, for the first one when they re-invited him. Do you know how much he got?
No, how much?
$5,000.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
Really? That's nothing.
Yeah.
Because I immediately thought about Forged in Fire, and compared to that, Forged in Fire pays like the gold standard. It's crazy. No, double that. I mean,
well, here's the thing. I mean, here's the thing about Saturday Night Live. It's the most famous. It's like one of the most famous American shows.
Yeah.
And what happens is when you go on Saturday Night Live as a host, I mean, it rockets you into notoriety. Like, I mean, it gives you a real legitimacy. Every once in a while, like, I remember when there was the writer's strike and they couldn't have any, or the actors, it was a writer's strike or it was the strike in Hollywood.
Yeah.
You couldn't have anybody as a host who was a member of the, I guess, this union. So they ended up getting this fucking no-name comedian that no one ever heard of. And everyone was like, who the fuck is this guy? Well, he happened to be. It was really good for his career. And I think that what happens is they all say, like, why do we pay you? when you're going to end up becoming more famous because of being on here.
I get it. So. And I think, I mean, still it's a conscious decision for him to do it, despite the, you know, low paycheck. But right. They are making a lot of money off of you also. And I think it's almost like for us in the knife community, it's almost like Abe arguing that you should gift him your knives because you have so much more reach. And I think in an advertisement sense, that would even make sense, but it's still kind of unfair, you know? And I'm not implying he does that. He absolutely doesn't do that. But I'm just saying, comparatively, it's pretty much the same as if he would say that. And you can't say that. If you're a big show and they will make him more famous and all that, but still, he should get paid for his effort. He said it was 1 week of work. And he got $5,000 for that, which is nothing because he isn't super famous, but he's doing better than that. I would guess.
I mean, my opinion on the whole matter is that doesn't surprise me. I mean, these people are scum.
But
I'm surprised they offered him any money at all.
Okay.
I mean, what's he going to pay? Like, what are they going to pay a famous person?
I get it. I was immediately
musical act. What the fuck are they going to pay him? $10 million? I don't think so.
No, that not. But I was immediately thinking about Forged in Fire and putting that into context. I then thought, I mean, I know only the winner gets the money, but still, it's double that for a no-name person, really. So I was.
But you know what But the funny thing about the Forged in Fire thing, and if you were to compare, I mean, it is a hilarious comparison between Forged in Fire and the Knife Makers, and then Shane Gillis and Saturday Night Live. Forged in Fire kind of has you over the barrel because a lot of these guys need Forged in Fire, even though Forged in Fire really does need them. So a lot of these guys have no experience at all.
Yeah.
So they don't have agents. They don't have any understanding of what this has to do. So like the more interesting thing is like if you look at these celebrity shows where they'll take a dance or like celebrity dancing or something like that.
Yeah.
They'll get these people who have fallen off the wayside and they get the opportunity to get back in the spotlight and they take it and you're just like, why the fuck did this person get on this? This is like so low budget. This is so not what they're normally known for.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like an opportunity to get seen, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's why they do it.
Yeah, the whole thing's great. You know what? It's all crazy. Everything's a negotiation, which makes everything more difficult because it's like, you know, the funny thing is like I had an opportunity to be on Forged in Fire a couple of times, and I had the ability to say to myself, you know, I don't need to cut my nose off to spite my face by doing some sort of political action and just saying, how dare you ask me? I'm not going to go on this. I was super duper polite. And I wrote, I really appreciate you offering this, but I don't think at this point I could do it. They hit me up a couple and then I ended up sending my invitation to Ben Snoor.
Yeah.
Ben Snoor went on based on, I was like, hey, listen, I don't want to do this. You want to do it? And he's like, yeah, I want to do it. And he did it. He did it. That's one of the things I'll always be happy about is the fact that, you know, like I sent my invitation to Ben and he went on. And but at the same time, I wasn't going to burn a bridge over the whole thing. I was polite and it just wouldn't work. But at the same time, like I was just like, if something happens where Forged in Fire becomes something worth a damn, like money wise, or like all of a sudden it turns into the greatest show on earth, I don't want to, you know, tell them to go fuck themselves and then I'm on the blacklist. You know what I mean?
No, exactly. I mean, I think for you, it was the right decision. I wouldn't have done it either. And I think Ben, since he has a main job and makes the hammers more or less on the side, I think he has, I would say, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I would say he has less pressure regarding the business end of things. So he really can't lose being on the show. Whereas when you're a full-time knife maker and maybe you don't make it even to second round, then you're not only losing reputation, you're losing time and no one pays you for anything. So,
right.
Yeah, it's It's difficult.
It's
then.
A tricky spot. It's a tricky spot, and there. I appreciate the guys who go on because you know that they're just excited, and that's the best part. That's the best part of it all. It's I never want to think anything other than these dudes are excited for the potential. It's like going fishing. You know, you never know what's going to happen, but you're optimistic, and that's the best part.
Yeah. And I wish them the best. But I think, you know, the first season or maybe the second, I never watched the show, but I know the guys who were in first season, Mareko and some other dudes, I think they really benefited from it. Whereas with the later seasons, I don't know if that's really the case. But honestly, I don't know. I'm not even, you know, talking down on it. But,
you know, I don't know. I think from what I understand, it's coming back. So there was a whole thing about would they film all these episodes and all these people didn't get paid. I'm under the impression I've been heard from a reliable source is reliable source. And it's not the best reliable source. But it's pretty good. Like one of the judges, a friend of the judge said that they're picking it back up. So I think that hopefully the most important part is the people who won will get paid or, you know, that's the best part. So we'll see. What's interesting is that when I talk to a lot of people are starting to say because the show is kind of over, like people are over it, that it affected the bladesmithing bubble and people's interest in knives in general. So I don't know. Do you want to do some weird news?
Yeah. That it 100% did. I mean, even here in Austria, people come up and talk about it. So that they are watching it. So I think it has some influence on the general public, I would say.
Yeah. You want to do a little weird news?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, good. Guys, listen, this is the time where I'll find weird news and we'll talk about it. So what I'll do is I'm going to read you off some headlines and you say yes or no, and then we'll discuss them.
Okay. Right?
There was there's an old story about, did you hear about the judge who, the guy who was on a, this is too difficult to make a translation, but basically a guy was calling into a, he wasn't in court to see the judge. He did it by Zoom and it was about his license being.
Yeah, from his car. I've seen that. It was hilarious.
All right. So let's just talk about it. So this guy, this is the craziest story is, a judge is shocked when suspended drivers logs into their Zoom hearing from the car. A district judge in Michigan was stunned when a defendant charged with driving with a suspended license showed up for a virtual court hearing while behind the wheel. The assistant public defender introduced herself to judge something as the defendant dialed into the Zoom hearing. The judge couldn't believe his eyes. "Mr. Harris, are you driving?" The judge said, "Actually, I'm just pulling into the doctor's office. Just give me 1 second. I'm parking right now." Footage from the call shows the legal team standing in shock while the other courtroom is containing their laughter. An incredulous Simpson can be waiting for Harris to bring his vehicle to stop, but the proceedings started. The Harris's attorney requested adjournment, possibly up to 4 weeks. This is driving while the license is suspended and he's just driving. He doesn't have a license. The public defender admitted, "That's correct, Your Honor." And he goes, "I don't know why he would do that," the judge said. defendant's bond is revoked. Basically the guy had his license revoked and he went into a court hearing on the goddamn. I mean, you can't make it. The hardest part about it. So the guy, obviously, if it didn't make sense to the listener, he was in his car. He was supposed to go do a Zoom meeting, judge the thing. It was about his license being suspended. Yeah. And he was in the car driving. I mean, you can't fucking make it.
And it's not only a news article writing that. There is video of the whole thing, and you see the mimic of the judge and of the how do you say the guy who
the defendant?
Yeah, the defendant. And what I thought first. Until I learned it's real, I thought that's staged. That can't be real. You can't be that stupid.
It's madness. You know what? It doesn't surprise me because people just don't use their fucking heads. And this is the hardest part. I mean, in the knife making game, I don't know how many times you say don't put the knives in the dishwasher. Yeah. They just don't listen. I have a knife. I'll have to send you a picture. These people, I told them not to put the knife in the dishwasher. They put it in anyway.
Let them pay.
I've never seen anything so swollen. I mean, it was swollen out. The Horby bolts are holding the knife scale together. And you can see you can see through the insides. It's like the most unbelievable thing. I'm actually gonna send it to you.
Now I have a question.
Mad. Go ahead.
Do they present some excuses, or do they straight up say, "I didn't listen to you, I'm sorry, it was my fault"? And
well, just like the guy, the defendant here, I mean, it's like there's no other. I mean, you're caught red-handed. I mean, I have to send this to you just because it's just so ridiculous. But basically, you know, I don't know, frankly. I don't know, because it's like it's such madness. But at the same time, yeah, they try to work their way out of it, and I don't really fight them, you know. I try to just,
yeah, I'm very different in regards to that. If there is, you know, I've had one time, there was the excuse, they were on vacation and their niece was watching their home, and it was a believable story, you know. It was like the dog ate the homework, but yeah, I believed it. And I fixed the knife. Oh, fuck. Those pictures.
That's
are
good, right?
What the fuck?
That's unbelievable, right? I mean, it's like you can see through both sides.
Crazy.
Is that unbelievable?
That's pretty ridiculous.
My liner held. The liner held. Yeah. But from the wood to the liner didn't hold.
The Corby bolts also did that
Corby
thing.
Corby bolts held.
Yeah.
But you can see a little bit of, you can see some, the whole thing went. I mean, well, I'll tell you what happened. So, what were you saying at the end?
Yeah, I'm just saying the excuse was believable, and then I fixed it for free. But you know, if you're coming to me, telling me straight up you didn't listen to what I said, or look at the do's and don'ts sheet, you're paying for the repair because it was your fault. It's like driving your car against the concrete wall and expecting Mercedes-Benz to repair it for free. Nope, not gonna happen.
Well, for me, it was a weird situation because the guy had bought a couple knives for me. And so I don't get this very often. So for me, it's just like I do a no questions asked for most people. I pretty much do no questions asked, yeah, just because, I mean, now we're dining. I refer to it as we're dining on our return business. Like our return business is like, Matt is like, thank God for a return business. So like, to me, if I give a little good customer service, it was cool. So when he sent me that picture, oh no, he didn't send me the picture. He sent me the knife and I took a picture and I sent it to a few people. And I said to him, I got the picture. I'm just like, I'm going to repair this. I'm going to prepare this knife because it's funny. And the other thing is he waited years. He'd been sending me messages. I get once in a while, I'll get a guy or a customer who will fuck something up, say, hey, I was wondering if you could fix this. And I'll write back, yeah, here's my address, send it, I'll get it back to you quick. And then a year will pass, and then they'll send the same fucking email a year later. This guy with this one must have been, we're talking three or four years of him saying, you can repair this. And I kept saying, yeah, of course, send it. But I'm not going to call him up every 5 minutes saying, I haven't got it yet.
Yeah, but that's,
so when it arrived, yeah, I called him up and I thought, I'm going to have a laugh about it because, I mean, it is crazy. I mean, it really is. I mean, it's those pictures I sent you are not as bad as if you saw it in person. When you see, yeah, it in person, you're just like, I held it up against the sun and it's like, I mean, you can see right fucking through it. It's crazy. And like a lot, it's way worse. When I sent you the pictures, I found the first ones I could find. I didn't have a lot of time to find the ones that are just like total madness. So I called him up and I'm like, I said, listen, I'll take care of you, but you got to tell me the truth. This went in the dishwasher a couple times, right? And he goes, well, no, not in the beginning. Not in the beginning. It started to change, and then my wife just kept putting in the dishwasher. So it had gone in the dishwasher for a year. They've been using it for a year. And we started a good laugh about it. I said to him, I'd never seen anything like that before. I said, I'm going to take care of you, and we're going to get you squared away, but I want you to know I've never seen anything like that before. And he laughed, I laughed, and he ended up buying an oyster knife, you know, just because he appreciated me. I said, I'll take care of you, I got you, and it was all funny. But the crazy part was like, I'm glad that he didn't deny it.
Yeah, yeah,
he was totally. Just like, We didn't in the beginning. We didn't in the beginning. But then all of a sudden, we still thought, what the hell? So, he made a decision.
I have to say, if that works out for you, I mean, there are companies like Leatherman or Zippo with their lifetime guarantees and no questions asked and policies and all that. And I think if that works out for you on a business end, then fuck what I'm saying and totally do your thing. Well, but also, I'm thinking a little, I'm always comparing it to other businesses. And to me, those kind of situations where we as knife makers just repair things with no questions asked, it's a little bit like buying a car and expecting the dealership to, fill it up with gasoline and change the tires once they are worn out. You know, some wear is just to be expected. And if you're not taking care of your product, no matter if it's a knife, a car, or what have you, then, you know, there is a slight responsibility on the customer end as well. And if you're just stupid, then fucking pay for your stupidity is what I'm saying. Because
I agree with you.
Yeah, yeah.
I agree with you 1,000. You're absolutely right. The problem is, I'm going to speak for United States. I'm speaking on behalf of all of the United States.
Okay.
Everybody, I am fucking America. Representing the entire United States right now. A lot of these guys don't take responsibility for their actions. And that's like that is part of American culture, is not take responsibility for your actions. And that is like, I think that it's an unconscious act of defiance that has permeated the American psyche. And I feel as though in there are certain circumstances about getting something for free. You know, I just actually just listened to the newest episode of Overseason, Tony and Xavier, overseason.com, overseason.us, the podcast. They were talking about people who send food back at a restaurant. And they were talking about this one story that Xavier was one of the managers of this restaurant. And he was saying that this guy, they ordered all this food. They looked a little shabby. Next thing you know, they complained there's a hair in the food. So he says, oh, I'm so sorry. This is terrible. And he goes back to the kitchen and he says, they found a hair in the food. And they're like, well, what color hair was it? And he's like, brown. He's like, well, everybody here is redheaded or something like that. You know, they're like, well, let's just take care of them, whatever. So then the next part of the meal comes out and they complain again. Another piece of hair comes out. So then the third thing, he's like, all right, this is some bullshit. I'm like, whatever you guys are doing, this has never happened to us before. Three different courses with three different meals, you know, three different courses of everything. And it turns out that they were, you know, scamming out of getting a free meal.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a lot of people who are trying to get free shit out of people, especially in the United States. And there's like, if you fly and you have any kind of problems, you can throw yourself around and get some free miles. Or you can, there are ways in which you can kind of like, you know, not scam, but you just can like needle your way into getting some free.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that there's a lot of people who totally believe in that.
I mean, that's super weird to me. As much as I'm a hard ass regarding my business, or pretending to be a hard ass, because sometimes I'm relatively soft, really. But as much I would never send a meal back. I mean, as long as, you know, the meat is not rotten or something really off, a hair, for example. That really, if the meal was good and the service is good and the restaurant is fine and I love eating there, that just can happen. I have it happen in my kitchen myself.
There's a lot. There are certain people who send food back. I actually know someone who is a difficult person, and they are known for sending food back to the point where the owner of the restaurant goes back to the kitchen to say, be prepared, because it's going to come back at least one time. And it is a power move. But it is one of those things that there are certain people who demand free stuff. I'll be honest with you. When I was a kid, there's a company called L.L. Bean. I don't know if you heard of L.L. Bean.
No.
It's a super famous company in Maine that sells duck boots and, you know, hunting stuff from Maine. And
okay.
It's very, like, very well known in the United States. They had a policy on their boots that it was no questions asked, something wrong with them, you send them back. So my dad used to wear these shoes, and as soon as they got worn down, he would send them back and give them free shoes, and he loved it. He loved the fact that he could just send them back and give them free shoes. And he got me to do that, and then I stopped doing this, but Leatherman had that same situation, and I remember accidentally breaking off it was my fault. I broke off one of the blades and I sent it back and they sent me a new one. I stopped doing that because I felt like at a certain point, I got to the point where I was just like, at what point is this, am I just being an asshole?
Yeah.
I stopped doing that. But I mean, there are a lot of people who are looking for, if it's free, it's for me and I'll take three.
Although with the guarantee and warranty things, that's a little different, I feel, than a hair in food. And as I said, right. If the food is completely off, if it's rotten or something, you know, something really bad happening or a cockroach in it, that's a problem. Or a maggot or whatever, what have you.
Right.
But if someone is sending notoriously their food back, I would be scared shitless that they are teabagging my food and sending it back. You know what teabagging is?
Yes, I know what teabagging
yeah,
is.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't. You can't.
If I'm the kitchen staff, I'm totally teabagging his food.
Dude, you cannot. You can. You're officially banned from ever working in a restaurant. Mm. That's like the cardinal sin. That whole the whole spitting in food or doing something to food is like a cardinal sin. It's like complete blasphemy in the food game.
See,
it's
I was
like,
never a restaurant worker. I didn't know yeah, that, but I'm thankful
guys,
it is a sin.
Fast food guys, maybe fast food guys, maybe they'll do something to you, but like. A professional cook who believes in his shit, because whoever's around him will always know.
Yeah.
If you're out. I mean, you can't trust a person like that.
I think as a restaurant worker, you have those morals and you shouldn't do it. But if I was in his position, the guy sending the food back all the time, I would be scared still, because I'm thinking, at some point I will run across law of average, as you put it always. Yeah. You know, at some point they will jerk off into my food 100%.
Let's hope not. Jesus Christ. I hate that shit. I even hate even hearing about it. But that reminded me of when I worked at a restaurant with Tony, my business partner. We were like slammed. We were running out of Grey Goose vodka. And I was in the back. I said, if I poured some Absolut in that Grey Goose bottle, you think anyone would notice? And he turned to me and he says, if I found out that I got a drink from you and I got a Grey Goose and you put an Absolut, I would hit you with a chair. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. He's like, I'd hit you with a chair. I'd be so fucking mad if I found out. I've owned a restaurant and they fucking substituted it. They just poured anything in a bottle. I kill you. I'd legitimately kill you.
To be honest.
So I was like, that was the end of that.
No, I love hearing that there is such a high honor codex within the restaurant workers.
What is the hospitality industry? You know, you're supposed to be a degree hospitable. But it does remind me, I had something recently. We've been starting to fool around with discounts.
Yeah.
And a lot of it's because we figured out how to do it on the website. Allison figured out how to do the discounts on the website. And every so often, 10%, you know, it helped business. I mean, it gave us a run. You know, we would get it. People like a sale. People like a sale. Guy writes in to me, sale was over. I made it very clear. You know, in my mind, I'm just like, this sale can't end fast enough. You know, everyone's, you know, I'm happy to, I'm not mad about it. I'm glad. I mean, it was ultimately good business.
Yeah.
And a guy sent me a message saying, I try to get your knife and I put in promo code. You know, I tried adding it to, I know what it was. Guy had a gift certificate. And our gift certificates are not part of, like, you can't buy something off the website with a gift certificate. It has to be called in. And a lot of that's because we haven't figured that out. And we're not buying, I buy basically printed watercolor paper.
Yeah.
And I watercolor paint the gift certificate. So there's you can't add a serial number to the website and you'll get, you know, that money.
Yeah,
off.
Makes sense.
Yeah. You know, we're not that. You know, you gotta write. The other thing is, you gotta write it in. You want to make sure the right person's got it.
Yeah.
You know, want to make sure someone's not making it up. So, the guy sent me a message saying, "Oh, I got this gift certificate, and I tried putting it in, and I tried using your promo code, and I don't know what happened, but I want that 10% off." So we got a gift certificate, and he wants 10% off.
Huh.
So I wrote to him, I'm like, "Oh yeah, well you can't. I mean, it don't work that way. You gotta, you know, it says on the gift certificate, you gotta reach out." It says right on there, email, as soon as you get this, email this email address, and we'll get you squared away. So the guy was like hawking me in Shinik for, you know, that 10% off. And I don't know, I think we ended up giving it to him just because we thought ultimately it's not the end of the world. It's ultimately it's good business and stuff like that. But I definitely thought to myself, like, what a fucking scumbag.
Yeah.
What a fucking, you know, what a fucking bullshit thing. I tried 11:59 on Sunday night to do this thing and it didn't work. It didn't let me do it. And I think I deserve the 10% off. I'm like, I'll give you the 10% off. But it was just like, you know, that's some fucking squiggly shit.
Yeah.
I wasn't psyched about it.
Would you pay cash back if he bought something that doesn't reach the value of the gift certificate? Or how would you deal with that?
That's a fucking good one, because we had that happen.
Yeah.
Where we had a gift certificate that was given and the recipient said, I want a different... Oh, not a gift certificate. A knife was gifted to this person.
Yeah.
And then the person's got it. And then they said, this isn't really the knife for me. I would rather have something off your website. Can we do a swap? And I said, sure, no problem. You hadn't used it. I don't have a problem with that. Try to be as, you know, I'm not a fucking, these guys, these knife makers who are completely inflexible are, you know, they're making a huge mistake.
Yeah.
So I said, absolutely. I got you squared away. Tell me what you want. So he wanted something different and there was a balance left over. And he says, and I'd like you can cut a check to me for the balance. And I was like, well, I'm not doing that because I'm not, you know, you didn't buy the knife.
Yeah.
You know, if someone's going to get the gift certificate, someone's going to get the money back. It's going to be the owner of the knife, owner, whoever bought the gift certificate. So I said, if you can get, and we thought, what kind of bullshit is this? What kind of fucking, you know, they want a knife and a fucking check on doing that. So I said, well, all you got to do is, you know, tell the gift recipient, whoever bought the gift certificate or bought the knife in the first place, let them know and we'll refund them. Thinking that would be too embarrassing. It would be too embarrassing to the recipient.
You thought wrong.
You return it, you want money. Well, it turned out to be the son of the owner, the person who bought it was the mother of the kid. So they reached out. We ended up refunding her because, I mean, you know, the fucking mother. And then we sent the knife. But at the same time, it was like, I don't like a lot of fooling around too much. You know what I mean?
I would feel so weird if I was the guy asking for a swap and then you even being as flexible as you are and complying with that and making it happen and then me asking for the balance. I would feel so wrong. I mean,
that's madness. That's madness. Like, I deserve the money too.
Yeah. It's a little weird. Slightly.
Yeah. That's the hardest part about the gift certificates, because we do them. I don't want to get too deep in the weeds, but because of our tax write ups or the way we do our tax or the way we sell stuff, we can't charge sales tax for gift certificates. Gift certificates, you don't charge sales tax.
Okay.
So the recipient of the gift certificate ends up having to pay the sales tax at the end. Don't ask me. So we couldn't figure out a way to have a gift certificate for a knife, didn't work. So the problem is sometimes there is a balance. So a lot of times people buy, you know, we get a t-shirt or you can get some mouse or maybe people upgrade. I mean, the people are getting a $500 gift certificate for a knife too, aren't generally like money grubbers that often. So it's like, it usually all works out.
Yeah.
Hopefully, but you know, you never know. Wow, look at that. That first question fucking got us rolling. That's the way I like it. Perfect. You know, this is called vamping, when you can find something and then you can make a conversation of it. So we have San Diego cop quits after locking himself in the backseat with a woman he arrested.
Yeah, totally. I'm all for the cop stories always.
Yeah, so a San Diego police officer has resigned from the force after he got caught locked in the backseat of his cruiser with a female detainee who propositioned him for sex. Anthony Hare, who had been with the San Diego Police Department for 2 years, left the job last month, one day before his second scheduled interview with investigators. Newly released body cam footage of August 2023 shows the officer in the vehicle with a female suspect he arrested on her suspicion of stealing a car outside a convenience store. The suspect, who hasn't been named, had also been a bench warrant out for her arrest. After the officer detained her, he was supposed to bring her to the police department for questioning, when the suspect can be heard asking him if he's single before saying that she was down to fuck right now. The officer interrupted her by saying, don't say that right now, because everything's being recorded right now. He then turns off his body cam, pulls down a residential street. After about 20 minutes, the officer was forced to call a fellow officer to help him out of the squad car, claiming he locked himself in. I asked him if he was okay. He said, and then he said he had my control, his patrol car key with me. I asked him why he was asking for what he did need, and the officer panicked. Why did he need that? I asked him for his location. He says, I'm near Cottonwood. I asked him why he needed me, and he says he wouldn't tell me when I got here. He said he was really embarrassed. The woman denied anything appropriate happened. The officer claimed that he was checking on the suspect in the back. When I was waking her up, that's when I noticed the door closed on me, he said. And when I was kind of, that's when I was kind of, when I opened the door. So.
And of course you have to wake her up with your pants down. I mean, that's.
Right. Right.
Yeah, that's
right,
the obvious.
Right. Yeah. And every suspect immediately falls asleep as soon as they're in the back of a car.
Yeah, that's normal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm fucking sleepy. I'm going to sleep back here. I'm going to be here for a while. I'm going to take a nap. Yeah. Yeah. Nobody's like filled with adrenaline as soon as they get arrested.
And the body cam footage you can find on Pornhub.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. Huck too. I mean, it's unbelievable. You know what the funny thing is I have a friend who is an officer in internal affairs. And he does that. And he says, you know, when you watch those TV shows, the internal affairs officers are always like played as the bad guys because they, you know, the police officers think that you're against them.
Yeah.
When in fact, the internal affairs, he's like, the most of the things that I do, I'm actually exonerating the police officers. Like, I'll get a complaint about a police officer and I'll watch the footage and I'll realize that the officer did nothing wrong, and I was able to kind of like validate his doing nothing wrong, and then the complaint goes away.
Yeah.
He says a lot of times the police officers, he's like, I don't want to get another police officer in trouble, but I also have the obligation to say they put themselves in this position, and it's not my fault that they made bad decisions. And that's what a lot of police officers feel, as though, because, you know, you'd think, like, I would think that if I was a police officer, I would be incredibly lenient because I feel that I'm a degree empathetic to people's situations. I would probably be one of those guys, like, okay, I'll just slow down, I'll just relax over there. And I could tell myself not being a hard ass whatsoever. But a lot of these police officers come to the conclusion that they're like, I didn't put them in this position. These people made bad decisions, and they put themselves in this bad position.
I'm with him. And
which one?
No, with your buddy.
Oh, my friend.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Because I think, I mean, for one, he has a job, and he is risking his livelihood when he is charging those people, you know, more lenient or giving right. them a little leeway. So because I'm pretty sure he is responsible for anything he doesn't find, which he should have found out, you know, or
right.
Yeah. So I think for one, no one can ask him to put his livelihood or job on the line for the stupidity of other people. So yeah, I'm with him. But I get the empathy part that you said also. I get the idea. But at the end of the day, if you're an idiot, then stand up to your mistakes and be responsible.
The weird thing is like, this is only a story because we see people in the positions of authority, and we see them like they're supposed to be infallible. And this, when you hear these stories of police, I mean, the police officer, the woman said, she was clearly knew what the fuck she was doing. She says, let me hawk too. I'm a hawk too, and then we're going to get this thing done. And he was just like, yeah, I like a hawk too. No problem. Let's do a hawk too. Hawk too now is the officially like it's the PG way of being, you know, slightly obscene.
I like it.
Or just talking about sexual stuff. So the crazy part is we have all this high expectation that our officers and people in authority aren't idiots like the rest of us. These guys are fucking morons. And this guy to say that, to do that, is he deserved to be fired. I mean, he deserved to be fired just for being corrupt.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like Like, same thing with, like, you know, spitting in people's food.
Yeah.
I mean, once you do that one time, you can't be trusted.
No. Yeah.
You can't be trusted.
Yeah.
You're gonna hock to the people that you know, arrest. Can't be trusted that you can do the right thing. You can't trust somebody.
No. Once you do that once, it's over.
And you know, I love the police. I have friends who are police officers, but like none of this shit surprises me whatsoever. You know, it's funny. It's a funny story though, but I mean, it's just like, can you imagine? Hey, you got to come down here with the keys. Why? I got a thing. I'll tell you when I get down here. Everything's on record.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing that's not on record. I mean, obviously.
No. Difficult situation. Well, to get out of.
Now that, are you getting ready for the Olympics?
Absolutely not.
You don't watch the Olympics?
No.
No?
No.
Oh, my wife loves the Olympics.
Really?
She's so excited. Oh, my. We love watching sports. My wife is such a sports fan, but she loves, she's got memories from the Olympics when she was a kid.
Yeah.
Watching as a family the Summer Olympics and the Winter Olympics. So when the Olympics comes on, it is on and we're watching and I do enjoy it.
I always found it so confusing. I can see myself watching something like football or like soccer in Europe.
Right.
The World Cup and things like that. You know, the big things that I can get behind because it's one category of sport and I can understand it almost.
Right.
But Olympic Games was always, what is that sport again? And what are they doing? You know, it was slightly confusing to me always and too random, confused.
No, you're 100% right. But at the same time, I do remember watching, we watched the swim. My daughter was a swimmer, so we watched all the swimming. I did enjoy all that. But I also, for me, like, I don't watch movies anymore because I'm just like, ugh. But like sports, you don't have to be fully invested. You can kind of do other things too. So like, I like watching baseball and I like watching basketball because I don't have to have my eye. You know, watch a movie. If you miss one fucking line, you're ruined.
Yeah, you can't hock to with the movies.
Fucking hock to with the movies. You're out.
Yeah, I mean, it's that like, doesn't work.
No, it doesn't work at all. All right, so this is a story about the Olympics. They're called, these anti-sex beds are installed in athletes' rooms at Paris Olympics.
I want to know what an anti-sex bed is.
Okay, there you go. You heard it. You heard it, everybody. Athletes of the Olympic Games of Paris may be elite, but they also have needs. While the Olympic Village, wherever the games are being held, have a reputation for sexy time between athletes, organizers in Paris are prepared to make their accommodations as unsexy as possible. So-called anti-sex beds are what the athletes will find themselves sleeping on. The twin-size beds made with cardboard frames claim to support the weight of a person up to 200 kilograms, but seemingly less sturdy construction and small size is intended for one competitor. The Olympic Organizing Committee insisted that the new beds are about sustainability, made from 100% recycled material. I hope that the Paris 2024's efforts to reduce this impact will show that it's possible to do things differently, said someone in environmental excellence. The well-meaning for the environment or not, sex at the Olympics has been a long issue with the athletes. The Tokyo Olympics boasted similar sex-stopping beds. They had sex-stopping beds. Also manufactured by Airweave. Through the competitors, they were told not to be intimate with one another due to COVID-19 pandemic. Paris had previously lifted the ban, where they were set out to hand out 300,000 condoms to the athletes to promote safe sex. It's very important that the conviviality here be something big, Olympic and Paralympic Village director says. Working with the Athletes Commission, we wanted to create some place where the athletes would feel very enthusiastic and comfortable. So
why would they try to prevent?
I don't know. But one person says the athletes are at their physical peak at the Olympics. When the competition is over, they want to release some of that energy.
Yeah, but how would that be a problem? I mean, those are all adults, so I'm thinking, what the fuck?
You know what? It might be. I mean, just to speculate, I would imagine that maybe if they're not fully focused on the task at hand. I mean, some of these countries, you know, the Olympics are very important. They're not as important to the athletes as they are to the country.
I thought about that, like, as well, but then I thought, what prevents them from having sex with themselves?
Well, you got a good point there. I mean, I mean that bet ain't going to stop that.
Right.
I mean,
and so, and I mean, then you're not fully committed either. So I'm thinking, right. Huh?
I think it's hilarious that they care. There's more at foot, because it's like, you wouldn't go out of your way to make special beds just because you don't have sex for any other reason than there's something other than that. Maybe there's, I don't know.
No, that's like, a good point. Imagine the orgies that happened before that.
The what?
The orgies or orgies.
Orgies. Oh, yeah, orgies. No. But, you know, it's funny. I wanted to keep you saying orgies for a while. That would have been funnier. All the morgies. I bet there's a lot of orgies going on in the Olympics.
Fuck.
You know? Yeah. Hey, listen.
I said it in
I can't make too many jokes because, I mean, you speak more than one language. I barely speak my own. So I shouldn't be making any funny. Yeah, that's for sure.
Same here with my own.
I'm with you, but I don't know. There's got to be more to it than just, I mean, you don't invest in, like, there's got to be some sort of, like, I don't know, but
something,
like, I could totally imagine.
But why don't they talk about it in the article? What happened?
Well, we need a different article, but I'll tell you what, there's different types of Olympic athletes. There are Olympic athletes that are, like, strictly, that's what they do all the time.
Yeah.
And then you got, like, the dream team, the United States basketball team, where these guys play basketball all year long. They get the best of the best. These motherfuckers don't have to practice. They are, like, legitimate professional basketball players, and they are so psyched to go because they just want to kick some ass. And this is not like we've been waiting. You know, half these Olympic basketball players, they're it's a free ride for them because they don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
You know, they're worried about their professional team. They're not willing. The biggest problem is now that the American basketball team is so good, they don't want to lose because it would be embarrassing.
Can they
but
lose?
But in the meantime,
I mean, aren't they?
Yeah, they could lose their teams. They don't steamroll them. I mean, there's some Europeans are now.
Really?
There's some of the best players in the NBA are European.
I didn't know that.
Like,
that's surprising.
Luka Doncic is from, I think he's from Serbia or Croatia or Serbia.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I know that there's a big difference, ladies and germs. But he was in the NBA finals. He was on the ballot to be most valuable player.
Okay.
And then Jokic. Another one who's like another, I think he's from Croatia or Serbia too. These are some of the best players in the NBA are from Europe.
Huh.
So, like, I would imagine in an Olympic basketball team is just like, this is just going to be fun. We're going to fuck everybody.
Man, I didn't even know that they played basketball at the Olympics. So,
oh, dude, there are great clips of Kobe Bryant saying, we're gonna fuck everybody up. We have to win this because it'll be embarrassment if we don't. And half those guys are just like, this is great. This is my summer. I get to go to Europe and I get to play with my friends.
Yeah.
We're already elite basketball players. And who does it really matter if we will lose or win? Who gives a shit? I'm gonna be an Olympic athlete. So they go to the Olympic. You know what? It's probably all because of the basketball teams. The basketball teams, or the people don't give a fuck.
I bet.
That's who this is.
I bet they don't get paid as well at the Olympics as within their teams either. So I bet they get more within the teams.
The Olympic athletes don't get paid shit.
Nothing.
Get sponsorships and stuff.
Okay.
But I remember Ronda Rousey, who used to be one of the best UFC champions. She said that when she got off they gave her 10 grand. That was it. She said she had to go get a job as a waitress. Right afterwards,
almost like SNL.
yeah, she did a little bit better than Shane Gillis.
Same principle,
a little bit. Yeah, it's like fucking. I mean, I'm sure. Hey, you know what? Fuck that. She got to pay taxes too. So, Ronda Rousey made as much money as a winner of Forge and Fire.
So
these Olympic athletes, I don't think they get paid a lot, and they get taxed. If they get 10 G's, they get taxed down to 6.
Also, they get taxed where they are. So if the Olympic Games are in Europe, I think they pay local taxes, which are pretty high compared to the U.S. taxes. They are like 20 to 24%.
So what is the bottom line of the sex beds? That's extra, that makes it worse.
Yeah.
If you don't get paid,
yeah,
you can't fuck anybody on a bed.
Yeah.
Fuck out of here, man. That's some bullshit.
Huh.
That sucks.
That might explain
sex beds. What else are you gonna do?
Yeah, that might explain all the fucking in the first place. So they should pay them better, and they won't. Then they will be more serious.
Yeah, pay them better, and then they won't be fooling around.
Right.
I mean, period. Yeah. Period. That's it. This
makes
is a money
sense.
Thing.
That's logical.
We have. This is a good one. We're going to finish with, I'm going to give you a couple options and then you make a decision.
Okay.
How many people have been killed by alligators in Florida? The number may surprise you. That's one question. I don't think you could guess.
I will, but go on.
All right. We have a toy grenade causes a scare at Oak Park Elementary in an elementary school. Toy grenade. We have a British brewery overwhelmed by crazy demand for its Osama bin Lager.
Stupid. Yeah.
But funny too. Times passed, you know, comedy is tragedy plus time. Yeah. So those, let's go with those three. Oh, and then there's this or AI generated model with more than 157,000 followers earns $15,000 a month. So those are your four choices.
Yeah, I'm taking
how many alligators?
I'm taking the alligators and the brewery then.
Okay. Between the brewery and the alligators, which one are you going to go with?
Yeah, then the alligators, because I'm interested in the number.
I know, but
I'm guessing
Osama bin Lager is good.
Are we talking a year?
We are talking in let me read it to you and then we'll decide. I actually had to count this up. Florida is well known for its alligators, which inhabit many of the state's swamps and wetlands. Despite their cute appearance, I don't know who says cute, these animals are incredibly dangerous when they bite, and they rarely bite. Since 1948, the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation has recorded over 450 alligator bites on people in the state. And there's a specific number of them being fatal since 1948.
Yeah.
How many do you think were fatal? How many people were killed between 1948 and now by alligators?
I'm thinking 25 to 35.
Holy shit, dude. You got it. It's fucking 30. Wow.
Yes.
Wow. Dude, you're the man. Yeah. Oh, dude, you are the fucking
man. Like,
that was awesome.
Like that American zookeeper, that crazy guy. What's his name?
I hate the
blonde guy.
yeah. Dude, you hit it on the nail on the head. You said it's between 25 and 35. Fucking 30.
Yeah, I should have said
you
30.
You did it, dude. Holy shit. Ben Camon knows his fucking alligators. Two of the greatest attacks involved a case in 2007 and 2019. Both cases, the victim was killed by an alligator while trying to evade police in local waterways. So these two people were like criminals trying to run away from the police.
I think I've heard that. That was recently, I think, right?
One was 2019 and one to 2007.
Fuck, imagine.
Certain lakes in Florida also present more risk than others, Lake Okeechobee and Lake Orange Lake being the most alligator infested in the states. Yeah, there's a whole list of all the people who were killed. I'm actually going to send this to you too. So I'll send this to you so you can read about it, because it's every single alligator bite.
Okay.
How do I get to it? I'm going to send it to you when this is done. What, I mean, I don't know what else to say other than you got it 100%.
What I find astonishing is how casually those Florida men's will, scare those alligators off their golf course. There are a bunch of videos like that where they just scare it off. And I'm thinking, I wouldn't even go near that thing. I would maybe shoot it with a golf ball, but...
I think that, I don't know, man. There's so many, I don't fuck with that. I don't fuck with wildlife.
Yeah.
I just don't fuck with them. I mean, like, even I get this goddamn steak that comes in my shop. I did get a snake grabber.
Yeah.
I was going to make one, but then I thought, that's just too much work. So I got a thing that, because I can't just call my friend every time a snake's here, and that's like pussy shit. And the other thing is I don't like grabbing with my hand when it tries. I need to get it before it gets in a, like a crack in the shop. So I got a snake grabber so I can just take care of it myself.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But I just don't want to fuck with wildlife.
Man, I recently just talked to a friend how dangerous cows and boars are. If you go near them, I mean, those animals like cows, they weigh like 500 kilograms. I don't know, that's almost 800 lbs. Or, yeah.
Oh, yeah, 800
yeah,
pounds.
Yeah, 800 pounds. If you go near that animal and it is scared or does something weird or kicks you with its hand leg or something like that, you're done. Why would you go near that? I don't get it. Some people go near it with a dog even. And they have an instinct because they are scared of wolves. And if they see a dog, and maybe they have calves also, they totally can attack you, and they would just stomp you down.
We gotta do get you and Ben Snore back. We're gonna talk about it. We gotta do that again because we gotta work this out. We gotta figure out what's going on with all these. We have a woodchuck, which is a small groundhog. It's like, I don't know if you know what that is. A groundhog is like it's not a hog. It's like a big, very big squirrel.
Oh, okay. You know okay. Okay. Yeah.
Like a beaver or a weasel or something like that.
Smaller than a cat.
You know what I'm talking about? About the size of a cat. This one's pretty big.
Ah, I mean, groundhog. Big, yeah. Yeah. That was the movie. Yeah. Groundhog Day. Yeah.
Yes,
yeah. Exactly.
So we have one. We have some that live under our shed, and my small dog killed one a couple years ago, and it was like a wrestling match. Okay. Because they were the same size, and Bessie grabbed him by the neck and just like flipped him over like a fucking, just whacked him down, you know, just like it was madness. And then he kind of crept away and then died in the under the shed, and it smelled for months and stuff like that. And then we thought, all right, we're done with that. So there's another groundhog.
Yeah.
And every so often, Bessie is trying to dig on. She wants that. She knows she's got such bloodlust. This little terrier's got such bloodlust. We can't stop her because she goes through the bushes and she's found all the holes and she knows she watches it from the window. She knows it's going on. She is a fucking killer. She looks very sweet and everything. She's a killer. Well, she's been eating the fucking groundhog's shit. She's been like kind of getting into the hole and eating the groundhog shit. Now she has a we've got her vet checked, and the vet's like, well, she's got these parasites yep. they're not contagious, but they're from eating the feces of these other animals. Yep. And I'm just like, yeah, these fucking goddamn, she's eating the groundhog shit. So I don't fuck with these animals, and now Bessie barely gets a fucking high five from me anymore. I'm like, you get your fucking parasitic ass away from me. I'm so sick of you.
Yeah.
Animals are like, but the alligators, fuck those things.
Yeah.
I don't want to pet them. I don't want to see them. I don't want to know them.
I'll see it from a distance, but other than that,
yeah. I don't even like to see them from a distance. I'm slowly starting to get away from animals. In Florida, God bless you. But I mean, and I go down there, my sister's down there. I go down there under protest. Yeah. I mean, you can keep it. I mean, it's a petri dish down there. I used to go down there. And I mean, that was there was a story years ago that these container ships carrying exotic animals would crash.
Okay.
And all the fucking contents of these boa constrictors and wild birds and monkeys, they would kind of figure out a way to, like, it's the perfect ecosystem. It's a fucking jungle.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the perfect ecosystem. They have, in Florida, they have like anacondas,
yeah, in the Everglades,
that are as big as the ones from the movies. They have contests and how many people can catch anacondas and shoot them, because it's become a complete disaster.
Yeah,
they have little islands covered with monkeys with chlamydia. I'm not kidding. I wish I was.
See,
it's embarrassing.
In Austria, there is nothing. There is cows that could kill you, and there is maybe the boars. But other than that,
oh yeah, I hear
no wolves, no bears.
Are they aggressive, those boars?
Yeah, fuck yeah. They will fuck you up. And what's dangerous is their tusks. When they have those little piglets, And right. you surprise them in the forest, they will run to you and they will cut up your arteries in your thighs. Not
have you seen them in the wild?
Yeah. My father ran away when I was, you know, a teenager. I've seen him from the distance, and if they don't have the piglets, they are not as dangerous, and they are shy. They will go away. But if they have piglets right. and you surprise them, they will confront you, and then with their tusks, it's dangerous because they are not eating you, they are not biting you, but they are, you know, like with horns,
cutting
they're cutting you.
That's fucking crazy. So, like, will you, if you walk around, you will see a lot of boars?
No, not really. Look, I'm a lot in the forest, but I'm with my kids mostly, and maybe my wife comes as well, but with the kids, we're always loud, and since they are shy, they are getting away as soon as they hear you. But if you're alone, you know, and you're not talking, and you're moving silent, then and the wind is right, then maybe you'll surprise them. I think it's similar with bears in the US and shit like that. Usually they are shy as well, but if you surprise them, they will fuck you up. And
I don't think, dude, we've been getting, I've been walking with the dogs and I've been seeing more foxes. We've never seen foxes before. And I've seen these two foxes in the middle of a very public park just chilling out.
Yeah.
And I've never seen foxes before. And all of a sudden they're becoming more brave. And there are more bear sightings, black bear sightings around by us. And raccoons are more less nocturnal.
Okay.
All these animals are a little bit becoming more brazen. Coyote problems in this country are like huge. Like people's dogs are getting taken away, but the wildlife, dude.
Yeah,
it's a problem. Yeah. Real big problem.
I mean, foxes aren't really dangerous, I'm thinking.
Well, our town had posted last year that there was a rabid one that was attacking people and their dogs.
Fuck.
But they're a tiny little fucking dog. I mean, they're tiny. They were tinier than my dog. My dog was so excited. She was just like, I'm going to fuck.
Yeah, but rabies is dangerous.
Fuck this. I'm going to, I know, but she got a rabies shot. Did I ever tell you that I got a fucking, I ever tell you this? We got to get out of here soon. But I ever tell you one night, and this is because my wife is a nurse practitioner, and my wife is also not only a nurse practitioner, but she has a master's degree, two master's degrees, master's degree in public health and epidemiology. So like when it comes to infectious disease, I don't fuck with all these tinfoil hat guys. I go to the source, someone with a master's degree from Columbia University.
Yeah,
I don't fuck.
Of course.
When it comes to my health, I got the fucking, you know, Dr. Zayas. I got the king. Dr. Zayas was a bad decision, but I got it was from Dr. Zayas, was from Planet of the Apes. I'm not calling my wife Planet of the Apes. I'm just saying that I got a fucking doctor on board. And we were sleeping one night, and the cat was jumping up on the bed. Yeah. And we couldn't figure out why. It turns out a bat had squeezed into the house through where the crack in the window. Bat was flying around the room, and the cat was jumping up trying to get it. Well, when I got up, it grazed my head.
Ooh.
So it didn't bite my head. It just like touched. I think of the wing, like hit my head or something like that. So we got it out of the house. I opened the window, and we got it out of the house. My wife was up for the rest of the night reading about rabies and reading about bats. Because she's part of she deals with public health, you know, centers, and she deals with she deals with, she was the first person to treat COVID in our area. She became an expert on monkeypox. This fucking woman knows what the hell she's talking about. So I don't fucking, you know, she doesn't tell me about welds or plunge lines. I don't fucking talk to her about medicine.
Of course.
So she goes, she wakes up in the morning and she goes, you have an appointment with the doctor. We have an appointment with the doctor at the end of the day. We're going down to the hospital. What do you mean? Well, we've been exposed to rabies and we got to get rabies shots. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? She's like, the bat touched your head.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, but so what? I mean, I grew up my dad in the country. In the country, he had bats all over the place. He had bats in the house all the time, and it wasn't a big deal.
Yeah.
She says, we can't take that choice. You can't take that chance. We have a kid. We have a child, and rabies is fatal for people. We can't take that choice. We go down to the hospital. They gave me a fucking handful of. I mean, I had never had so many shots in my life. I thought they came in with a handful of shots. Like I thought it was like a bouquet of flowers.
Did you feel it? Did you get fever?
I didn't have. I didn't have.
No, from the shots, I meant.
That's
from the shots.
oh, the shot. Well, I thought when she came in with this pile of needles, I thought we're going to split them up. Hillary's going to get some of them, I'm going to get the other one. No, I got, it was based on weight. I ended up getting like 7 or 8 shots in the ass. It was fucking horrible. The craziest part was I didn't feel anything, but it was just like, obviously getting in the fucking, your ass is terrible. Turns out, because there's not a lot of human rabies cases, yeah, that we, and you got to take like 3 different courses of rabies shots. We single-handedly, my wife and I, cleared out the rabies vaccine stockpile, yeah, in our county. So if there was a rabies outbreak, we're fucking dead.
You've got all of it.
We got all of it. We got all of it. And I made a joke to my wife. I was like, after this, I'm gonna tongue kiss a raccoon. You know, I ain't worried. You know, no problem. I have rabies. Fucking let's fucking wrestle a fucking, you know, wrestle a fox. I'm ready. Bite me.
Hawk to that raccoon.
Yeah, the fucking hawk too. Give me that fucking hawk too. Well, funny enough with hawk too, they told us the story of this guy who contracted rabies.
Yeah.
He was an older guy. He had a glass of water by the side of his bed. It was open glass of water. Yeah. A bat flew onto the fucking rim of the cup, ducked his little head in for a sip, took a few sips of the water, flew the fuck off. The guy drank the water and got rabies from drinking the goddamn water cup.
Imagine.
Can you imagine?
No, it's so...
That's hawk, yeah, too. he got hawk,
but
too.
But what a bad coincidence. How much bad luck can you have?
I mean, it's fucking terrible. God damn it. Listen, you know what? We cannot go another minute without saying how good you were at figuring out exactly how many people died in Florida from 1948 to now from alligator bites.
Yeah, I mean, those Florida man stories, I'm kind of passionate about them, so I had a good feeling for them.
Ladies and gentlemen, our reigning champion, the reigning champion. If you want to guess who knows more about Florida alligators and the deaths, it's Ben Camone. He hit it on the nose. Whenever he gives you lotto numbers, you fucking take them. If he's got bets for you, you fucking take them. Ben Camone is the finest. Not only is he the finest knife maker in the around, he's also very gifted in terms of figuring out exactly how many of these things. I mean, I'm going to send you more questions.
Yeah, I mean, I can guess weights of people astonishingly good, but we can make that.
Are you being honest?
Yeah, truly so. When I see them,
all right.
But I don't know about pictures, okay, but in person, I'll totally do that.
What do you just go up to people and say, "Here, you weigh about 250 pounds"? Just like, or you like tell your wife, "I bet that fat."
No, I don't. You know, I don't do pounds. Women.
Oh, good for you. Good man. All right, guys. Next time Ben's here, I'm going to have him and Ben Snur on next at some point. Perfect. We're gonna test. We're going to put Ben to the test because, I want
to know about those crazy cow stories.
All right, we're going to hear about the crazy cow stories. Ben Camone. Guys, if you're not following Ben Camone, what the fuck's going on with you? Go to Camone. What is it? Camone_knives. I'm going to have a link in the show notes. Perfect. You know, Ben, get on the newsletter. Ben, you're the man. I really appreciate you coming out. And thank you for putting up with all my nonsense. And you're the man.
Thanks for having me. Hawk to the chopper.
That's a good one. Oh, shit. That was a good one. All right, guys. We will see you next week. I think so. All right. Whatever. I'll see you later.